In the fireside room this evening, we have Dale Jompgaard. Today's session number is JAD 2006. Today, Dale is continuing his series, Far More Is Possible Than You Imagine. Today's title is, Humans Shall Not Live by Bread Alone, but by Every Word That Proceeds Out of the Mouth of God. Let's listen in.
I'm Dale Jompgaard, and a retired psychotherapist and parish pastor. Also worked with Lutheran Family Service as the director of life education. Been coming to Holden for many years, so if you've been here before, we've probably connected. And welcome back, and it sure feels good to be back every time I come. The theme for my sessions this week is far more is possible than you can imagine. And that's Jesus talking. Far more is possible than you think. So I'd like to explore what he may mean by that. And I'm going to explore that today. I'm going to do quite a bit of presenting, a couple of experiential things. Because what I want to do is really take a look at what Jesus said and did in a very summary way, move on to some of the paradigm shifts that are happening today and how I see that helping us relate to what Jesus said and did, and then proposing a kind of model and wanting to get to that question, so what? What does it mean for us and how we live life and how we understand life? So I will do more talking than because of the shortness of time than I like to do, but also will welcome your questions or thoughts as you have reactions. To begin with, I'd like to have you stand up with space so that you can swing your arms. Okay, now put your hands on your hips, your feet about three quarters of a foot apart, something like that, whatever's comfortable. And now I'd like to have you pivot without moving your feet and see how far you can turn and then mark the spot on the wall. Get something that marks the spot, okay? Now go the other direction, mark the spot. Okay? Now lift your arms up. Now go as far as you can and mark the spot. Okay? Now go the other way as far as you can and mark the spot. Okay? Now put your hands on your hips and turn to the right again and go as far as you can and mark the spot. Okay, and go to the left as far as you can and mark the spot. Okay, what did you notice was the difference between the first and the second time you did it with your hands on your hips?
I could see more the second time.
You went farther.
Yeah.
You went further.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that was?
We loosened up a little bit.
Possibly.
You had more momentum while you're...
Okay.
Told us there was farther to go.
Yeah. And my hunch is you changed the image in your mind as to how far you could go. Because what really controls what your body does is the image in your mind of what it can do. And that's why opening up our imagination to what is really possible is a major factor in being able to do it. Please have a seat. Now, we usually have heard that Jesus came to reveal the nature of God, God's will, God's love for us. And so then we also think in terms of the wonderful things that he did. And often we say he did them to prove his divinity. I would like to pose another possibility, that he really did those things to show us the fullness of humanity. Now, what did he do? Well, these are just reminding you of things you know. He turns water into wine. He feeds 5,000 with a few loaves and fishes. He walks on water. He calms the storm. He heals the sick, the blind, and the lame. He forgives sin. He tells what's going to happen in the future. He fills a net with 153 fish. He raises Lazarus from the dead. All of those things are pretty far out, pretty way out. And after he does those things, he says to us, "Verily I tell you," this is from John 14, "very truly I tell you, the one who believes in me will also do the works that I do, and in fact will do greater works than these, because I am going to the Father. I will do whatever you ask in my name, so that the Father may be glorified in the Son. If in my name you ask me for anything, I will do it." And just a couple more familiar passages. There would be a lot of them we could look at. Matthew 7:7. "Ask and it will be given you. Search and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened for you. For everyone who seeks or asks receives, and everyone who searches finds. And for everyone who knocks, the door will be open." And then Mark 11. Jesus answered them, "Have faith in God. Truly I tell you, if you say to this mountain, 'Be taken up and thrown into the sea,' and if you do not doubt in your heart, but believe that what you say will come to pass, it will be done for you. So I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours." Is he trying to jar some images? You can move a mountain. Matthew 16:15. In the extended end of Mark. "Go into all the world and proclaim the good news to the whole creation. The one who believes and is baptized will be saved, but the one who does not believe will be condemned. And these signs will accompany those who believe. By using my name, they will cast out demons, they will speak in new tongues, they will pick up snakes in their hands, and if they drink any deadly thing, it will not hurt them, and they will lay their hands on the sick, and they will recover." There are many more verses that you are familiar with like those. And sense that urgency in Jesus that so much more is possible. how I've reacted to it. Well, we've come through a stage in which we had Newtonian physics. And Newtonian physics said essentially that if we can just examine the smallest thing, bit of which things are made up, we will understand how everything works. And what is most real is matter. Everything else comes out of matter. Mind comes out of the cells of the brain. And it left really no room for, quotes, religion or God. It just left it out. So we began, I think, one is that we participated in the benefits of Newtonian physics and then the way that was related to the development of medical science, the discovery of the germ theories back in the 1870s, about when that shift took place in medicine. And we've had tremendous benefits technologically, medically, etc. And I think we in the church wanted to hang on to, quotes, respectability. So we didn't want to claim too much that didn't fit that framework. So we were pretty comfortable with saying, well, science describes nature, and what we talk about is supernatural, outside nature. So anything that might happen in the way of a healing or anything else, we would call a miracle, an interruption of that which was natural. And I think because of this, that we had real difficulty, I know I am growing up in the Lutheran Church experienced this, we had real difficulty in expecting much to happen. Because after all, should we expect God to do a miracle? And it was a stretch. So it felt to me, at least, that we began to lower our expectations. I had an encounter with this when I was about 12 years old. I had broken my arm and had been rushed to the doctor and had the cast put on and had a cast on for 6-8 weeks at least, and came out with an arm that was all limp and had to begin all over to learn to use it and so forth. Had a neighbor boy that came over and was swinging on our swings, and he went flying through the air and landed and got up and his arm was bent like this. He walked home carrying it. And I kind of helped him home, and then I left and fully expected them to rush out to the car to go to the clinic. But no, they didn't. They didn't, and they didn't, and pretty soon cars began to arrive. And people had come together to sing and to pray. They had stretched his arm out and wrapped it in cloth, and I heard them singing and praying. And about 4 days later, he comes out, walking around with his arm in a sling, and looked kind of straight to me, and maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but... And then in another week or so, he began leaving the sling off and began using it. And I said, wow, what happened here? They really expected that to heal and prayed as though that was significant. Now, by no means am I suggesting that we don't use medicine. Please don't get that. But I experienced a different kind of level of expectation that I had in my Lutheran orientation. And I wondered about it. Well, I think we've had a model of a kind of a mechanical body. We've gone through a stage where we essentially thought that the body was one thing and the mind was another, and that both were kind of different entities. And then we've moved through a stage where we've had the idea that maybe mind and body are interactive. And this is leading us, I think, to a new stage, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But first I want to mention some things that I think are happening. quantum physics, I think, is certainly calling into question many of the assumptions of our Newtonian physics. Rather than the building blocks of its, quantum physics is talking about the happenings of particles. I appreciated your definition of the Heisenberg principle of indeterminacy for me the other night, which you explained that what that means, what is indeterminate, is that we can measure momentum, but if we do, we can't measure mass, and if we measure mass, we can't measure momentum, that the two somehow cannot be measured at the same time. And another piece of that is that the observer, or that which is used to measure whatever it is we're observing, changes the very thing we're trying to measure. And so it's really difficult to get down to what really is real. And things are moving, and things are dynamic. And I guess what I boiled that down to is that what quantum physics is beginning to talk about is that we are really dynamic happenings, not its. One of the ways that I learned about that, I read about a definition of a boson, which is a name for one of the particles. And boson, this article said, was a momentary burst of energy that lasts a millionth of a millionth of a millionth of a second. So maybe what we're made up of is bursts of energy that were always happening. Well, some physicists are mystics, and they begin to raise the question, well, what exists between bursts of energy? And so we might raise the question that boson that keeps happening seems to keep happening with purpose. Well, maybe what exists between bursts is purpose. Or another word for purpose might be word. That there is somehow a thought, a consciousness, or a word that is always becoming flesh. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and through Him all things were made. And the Word becomes flesh. So what begins to come to me is maybe creation is really an ongoing event. That it's always happening. God is always saying the Word that is becoming you. What you're really made of is the Word energized by God's light. That has a strange congruence with Jesus saying, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Well, when we thought of ourselves as its, we tended to think of I'm here and God is there. And we have a kind of faith in God. And we maintained a distance. And we thought of this as our body. And this is who I am. Well, we've discovered that that's only the slowest moving particles of your body. You have a heat body, you have a magnetic body, an electrical body, a vapor body, an odor body, an energy body, that we become light, as Jesus says. Now, how big is your body? Well, if you have a telepathic connection with someone who lives in New York, and those experiences often happen where somehow we know what has happened 3,000 miles away, or Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut, when he was up in space 10,000 miles away, he brought five figures with him, a circle, a square, a triangle, and a wave. And what did I miss? Star. Star. And every evening, he would put those in a certain order. And then he had people back here on Earth put them in the order that they perceived they were in. And there was tremendous congruence. Well, now, how big is our body? No longer the it, this little boundary, but we are interactive. Of course, this is new kind of stuff, so we go back to Meister Eckhart in the 12th century. And what does he say? Where is the soul? Where do you think the soul is? Yeah. Right on. We tend to think an automatic reaction is often the soul is in here. Now notice how that is coming from the idea that this it is who we are and the soul is in, is it kind of subject to it, is down inside of it. So Meister Eckhart says, the soul is not in the body, the body's in the soul. Notice the shift in what, wow. And these are only the slowest moving particles of who you are. So these are not who you are. Who you are is something so much more. You are a dynamic happening.
That's good to know because these parts are getting slower.
Yes. Why do they feel so itified? Boy, I know that too. Okay, just some more stuff that's happening. Let me... Dr. Randolph Bird, San Francisco General Hospital, 1988, a Christian, said, you know, I think prayer makes a difference. And I think we can maybe demonstrate it. Now his friend said, hey, do you want to get drummed out of the medical corps? Mm-hmm. You want to lose your license and a few other things? Well, he says, okay, we'll. So he designed a research project that involved 393 coronary patients. He asked them whether they would be willing to be involved in a research project involving people praying for them. 192 said they would. 201 said no. So he ran this experiment and he lined up Roman Catholic and Protestant Christian prayers across the country. And each prayer would pray for an individual each day and then they would change so that each person had 5 to 7 different people praying for them. And they were not given any instruction as to how to pray. And at the end of a year's period, these are the differences. Those being prayed for were 5 times less likely to require antibiotics than those that were not prayed for. They were 3 times less likely to develop pulmonary edema, a condition in which the lungs fill with fluid as a consequence of the failure of the heart to pump properly. None of the prayed for group required endotracheal intubation, in which an artificial airway is inserted in the throat and attached to a mechanical ventilator, while 12 in the group not prayed for required mechanical ventilator support. Fewer patients in the prayed for group died, 13 compared to 17 in the non-prayed for group, and a difference that was not statistically significant. Well, there's been some research that had gone on before, and now this was radical at the time. Today, Duke University and Harvard University and other major medical centers are doing major project or scientific studies on the efficacy of prayer or intention. And they often use people of many different religions and are very careful about the scientific protocol, because they also don't want it to seem as though any group is trying to prove anything. But there's a great deal of interest, and Harvard is having medical conferences for religion and medicine, so that what has happened is a great deal of interest. Larry Dossey has done quite a bit of research. He's a physician who had some early experiences that made him wonder, maybe there's more to this than what I've studied. And he decided to study the research on prayer, and he expected to get two or three studies, and he came up with 150. And he just says, let me read what... Today, just as physicians are getting used to mind-body medicine, another great transition is taking shape. We are facing a constitutional crisis in medicine, a crisis over our own constitution, the nature of our mind, and its relation to our physical body. There are simply too many events that cannot be explained from the perspectives of Era 1 and Era 2. Era 1 is the mind-body separated. Era 2 is the mind-body interactive. Both of them define mind as a product of the brain. The third era he's talking about, he uses a term, non-local mind. And what he means by that, its expressions include sharing of thoughts and feelings at a distance, gaining information and wisdom through dreams and visions, knowing the future, radical breakthroughs in creativity and discovery, and many more. And this part of your mind can be used today in healing illness and disease in what I call Era 3. And he uses the term non-local because, one, it is not a product of the brain. Two, it is accessible to us, that it seems to exist and makes possible not only connecting between people, knowing things that seem beyond what we can know by general observation, and precognition, knowing something that's going to happen in the future. And so there's a growing body of knowledge and evidence that these kinds of things are possible. I had a personal experience that I think is part of what has spurred me on to look at these things. And I've shared it with a number of you, but let me quickly tell it. I had learned some things about intuitive knowing, ways of tuning in and knowing about another person, some techniques. And so I had done some stress workshops in Alaska and was flying home, and I was very tired and didn't want to read or do anything. And the stewardess was coming down the aisle talking to various passengers about her about train and plane connections and hotels and so forth. So I decide to play a game, and I decide to see what I can know about her by the time she gets to me. So she comes, and I tell her I'm playing this game, and I said, do you mind if I check some things out with you? And she laughs and says, well, okay. And I said, well, the first image I have is that there's a man in your life. I see him sitting at a desk with accounting papers in front of him. And she said, well, my husband is a banker and manages a bank. And, you know, we're in the process of getting a divorce. Oh, okay. Second image I said, is there something going on with your heart? And some trouble there. And she said, I'm not aware of a physical problem, but I've had a lot of heartache the last couple of years. The third one I said is, I see you taking care of two small children, and I checked and you haven't had a baby. And she says, you're right, I haven't had a baby. And I'm living with my sister, helping her take care of her two small children. And the fourth one I said is that you're on your way to visit some friends in Portland, and that one of your friends' name is Laura. And she said, well, you're right, I'm going to get off the plane in Portland and go visit some friends. But none of them is named Laura. I do have a friend in Alaska named Laura. So I said, oh, okay. That's what came to me. She kind of chuckled and went on her way, and I was coming off the airplane, and there she was waiting for me. And she said, "How did you do that?" And so I said, started talking to her. We walked into the airport, and I was explaining some of what I had done. And all of a sudden, a gal comes running up and gives her a great big hug. And she turns to me and says, "I'd like to have you meet Laura, my friend." So these things, many of us have experiences like that. Dreams, ways that we've known that things were going to happen. Now, to talk about communication of cells and so forth is one thing between people, as we try to, you know, many attempts have been made to try to explain telepathy. But how do we explain precognition when no one knew that was going to happen and it was not even anticipated? She didn't expect to see that person at all. So it raises those kinds of questions.
Sure. Study. I was wondering if he did any controls on whether or not people that were going to be prayed for believed that it would help make a difference for them. Was there any that kind of, was
no.
it just simply that they agreed to be prayed
they
for?
They agreed to be
didn't
prayed
agree
for.
To be
right.
prayed for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they, in the more recent studies, they are working hard, and I think they did in that one too, double blind studies where the people don't know who's being prayed for. And that kind of thing. I think this begins, some of these kinds of ideas, begins to create a model that is far more dynamic and open to the role of faith than our old mechanical model. One of the things that I noted is that a lot of the language of Jesus and of the New Testament about our relationship with God is participatory rather than relational. Notice the phrase that Jesus says, "If your eye is sound, your whole body will become full of light and you will become bright as a lamp." That sounds like a here and now interaction going on, that we are becoming light, that we are receiving the light of God, the light of Christ, and that we become full of light. Other language, abide in my love and be filled with my love, language like that. It's a participatory language. And then be filled with the Holy Spirit. Receive the Holy Spirit. Let the Holy Spirit guide you and be in you. So there seems these three dimensions or revelation or manifestations of God. That God comes as light. God comes as love or as word, as purpose, as will. And God comes as spirit, spirit of life. And so, what a person is may be an ongoing creative process, an ongoing manifestation of God's love, light, and spirit. That maybe that's what we're really made of. And that we begin to take all these shapes. So that's what I've tried to depict here, is that God's light, love, and spirit are always present, and that somehow God says our name and we become the particular manifestation of God. Maybe that's what it means to be created in God's image. And it's not a one-time creation, but to me it's exciting to think that God is always saying the word that becomes the non-local mind, ultimately maybe the word of God. That notice then the invitation to pray is participating. That God is saying the word, and then Jesus comes and says the word, and they are healed, and they walk on water, and the bread is changed into wine. He says the word, and it happens. And then he says, now go out and say the word. Join, become co-creators with God. You have that capacity to create what is happening. You have the capacity to imagine the future and to say the word, and with the promise that it will happen. Things will happen out of our prayer, out of our saying the word. Tremendous invitation. So what I think it's about, Jesus keeps saying, if you have faith, if you have faith, you can, you will, you are. What is faith? Well, it's talked of as belief on one level, but in other ways it's talked about as participation in the will of God, the work of God. And so I like to, that word participation gives faith a dynamic that I think we sometimes lose. We Lutherans love the idea of belief, because belief sounds like if we just have the right ideas and we believe in them, then we got it all made. And I think we're missing part of the boat, because a lot of this isn't happening for us. Now, a homely example of what I mean is, if I had a television set sitting here, is it a television set? Only if there's a sending station. And I believe we are who we are only when we know that we are who we are because of the sending station. And what is faith? Well, the tuner in the television set. If it's not tuned in, what do we get? Static, noise, blur, lack of color, lack of clarity, deadness. Any of that describe us? I think we're out of tune. And faith, I believe, then, is that tuning in, sensing and knowing God and trusting God's presence and life and work in us. So I believe it's a dynamic happening that we can be involved in. This is a model for an individual. What I've left out here and haven't taken time to imply is there is a corporate naming too, that we are not just named as individuals, we are always named in relation to others, and we participate with each other on many, many different levels. The idea that I am an individual apart from you, apart from others, apart from God, is a total fallacy. But I hang on to that fallacy because of sin. And I want to get into what sin is about tomorrow. What gets in the way of the tuning process? Why are we ending up dead rather than alive, as Jesus implies? Okay, let me open it up for some questions or thoughts. What's coming to you?
I was doing this Bible verse work with the Sunday school kids. I'm the director, and we were doing the Romans. All things work for good for those who work with Him. And I was struck by the word with. And I said to the kids, did you notice the word with? And then, of course, I'm thinking, I wonder what that translates from, you know, the Greek and blah, blah, blah. But I was having kind of some of that same idea about participating, the idea about the word used about dynamic. And then I realized that you quickly get into sounding like you're talking about, I'm earning my way, I'm working my way. So I think the idea of participating is so wonderful and different, but we confuse it so much with this becomes about me now, this becomes about what I'm doing, how I'm, you know, if I work in a particular way, then I'm earning my way. And I think as Lutherans, we've been so, that idea's been so pounded out of us that this isn't about us, this is only about what God does for you. And that's true, that's the sending station, like you're saying, but then it's not that we have nothing to do with it or can't be participating or in that dynamic state. So that's a wonderful distinction for me to hear, and kind of helps, you know, I had an intuition that that was an important idea, but I haven't been able to formulate the thought mm-hmm. like you did. Mm-hmm. That's,
yeah.
I'm going to bring a book that I brought here that I got. I'm teaching in Bahrain. I have a psychologist that in our school that is doing a lot of work on this. It's exciting. The book is called The Seat of the Soul. I don't know if any of you read it or not. But it talks about us as being spirits. And then our soul is something we have angels with us, working with us with our soul to improve the world through this energy, and opening us up to this energy. I'll bring the book tomorrow. But a lot of this, it has the same feel to it. Mm-hmm. He's a physicist.
Mm, okay. I think our sense of righteousness, rather than fulfilling a law, it has a whole different ring to it for me when it's participating with the reign of God or the work of God. Seek first the reign and the work of God, and all these other things are going to be added to you.
You know people in the world that have this. I mean, Christ had it, obviously, but Gandhi had this. Martin Luther King at times had this. These are people that emanate this energy that they give to other people.
Mm-hmm.
You have friends that you've been around that you want to be around. There's this energy that they give out that's accepting and free. And
there is a problem with that, though, in that there are people who are charismatic that you want to be about, but that doesn't mean necessarily that they're good people.
No, that's right. That's right.
And that ability that we really need to discern the difference. And the same with mystical experiences. I mean, we got Psychic Hotline's making a fortune out there. Psychic Hotline. If mm-hmm. not, they wouldn't be able to afford the ads that they have on the television mm-hmm. set. So we need to be a discerning people to know the difference. Yes, there's power in the word and power in the Lord, but we have to know which is which. And there's all kinds of things going on.
So anything can be used for good or for evil.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know what you mean by that. So.
Well, what I heard you referring to is various psychic ability can be used negatively or for evil.
I guess there's all kinds of powers in there. Some are good and some are evil. Yeah.
Now maybe the powers aren't mm-hmm. good or evil. It's the way they are used is by what I'm
well,
trying
I
to say.
Well, I believe that there are powers of good and evil.
Okay.
I wonder, Dale, let me try to articulate something here, which is sounds like a statement, but it's really a question because I'd like your reaction to it. It feels to me like the radical kind of paradigm shift that this presents to us, and then those that are taking their cues to a certain extent from quantum physics. And from a lot of kinds of experiences that we know more about, or at least we know they exist, that there's a, instead of the divine being other, out there, which it seems to me that we continue to look at it that way, even though we get more sophisticated in our theological reflections about it. This implies a much different kind of paradigm, and that is that the divine is relationally a part of, and that it isn't that the divine is out there and knows something that we don't know, that we need to find out about so that we can do, but that the divine is relational in part of us, and the new thing emerges, which we haven't known before, but we'll know as it emerges in us and in between us. And it's a major paradigm shift for us to think about ourselves, to think about our theology. It isn't that there isn't another or other, it's a mix of our reality, but the other isn't out there and is inextricably connected to us. So it's like Duma, who I think also was a 12th century German mystic, said, God is a nothing wanting to become something. That's pretty a radical idea for us Lutheran Christians. Mm-hmm. But quantum physics begins to help us understand how that could possibly be. Well, I've kind of wandered all around there, but
is this what
you're talking about?
You've really picked up on, for me, a major difference, and that is we've talked about a relationship as though I'm here and God is there, and we have a relationship.
Right.
And what this is talking about is much more of a connection, and that we participate in that dynamic, and that through the tuning in, the faith, that it becomes the whole source of health and potential and dynamic and.
I think what you're saying is relationship is more of almost a scientific concept. See, I think of relationship in terms of social context, human context, and in that participation is implied to me.
Okay. Okay.
For example, people have looked at this whole model in terms of leadership, like Margaret Wheatley. Do any of you know her work on creative leadership? It's quite a different paradigm than we traditionally look at. But it's this generative, evolving, relational way of becoming something. And what can we do to aid that process? So you lead, or Parker Palmer talks about it, with lead from leading from within. That's another way of looking at it. I'm happily confused by all this. It's like it feels right, but I don't understand it.
See, the sending station is there. Whether we're tuned into it or not, that's what I think is where I stay grounded, is that I can, you know, the God is nothing is the kind of the radical place I can't go, because I don't make God be something by tuning in. That was already there. And that I participate in listening and speaking the word that he's given me, but I don't create the word.
Mm-hmm.
And then therefore make him be something, or he or she, or make God be something by me speaking it.
Yeah. Yeah. God is still the unnameable, but God says the word and sends the light and the spirit, and which we participate in. So it's not like, again, that we become God, but we participate in the way God makes a presence happen, God's presence happen.
Well, God's intention in sending Jesus is for life.
Right.
That's it. And
so loved the world. And all Jesus talks about is love. Every time Jesus talks is about love and acceptance.
So the real goal is to free us to come to life with love.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what it really means to be alive, is to love. So to love is to live, and to live is to love.
For what powers to deal with and trust in. Do they give life? And in that,
do they lift up?
And that's right. As St. Paul says, does it edify? Mm-hmm. And right, most of life, or most of existence, is tearing down. We construct ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
By destroying someone else, or over against another person. But into that, it was kind of all a direction to say that's how we participate in the being of God.
Okay, and lest
we don't make God happen, but we do participate.
Lest we just talk about participation, let's do something. So I'd like to invite you to just get centered in your chair. And bring to mind Jesus' phrase, if your eye is sound, your whole body will become full of light, and you will become bright as a lamp. Receive the Spirit. Abide in my love. Every cell in your body is alive, is happening. Let yourself become receptive and open. No need to make anything happen. God's light, empowered by the embrace of God's love, guided by the Spirit. May the peace of Christ keep your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. Be weary, walk and not grow faint, rise up with wings like an eagle. The Lord will renew your strength. Revelations and this experience go with you.